Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, it's Dr. Karen. You know, I'm having some technical difficulties here. Sometimes that happens. I think it's because I'm starting to get a sore throat today and my energy's lower than usual, and so the computer usually kind of grounds to a halt, you know. Anyway, so my apologies if we're having technical difficulties. But I do have a very special guest today, and I think I was successful in unmuting your phone line here. She is the dating goddess, a midlife woman who, after her surprise divorce at age 48 from her husband of 20 years, turned her search for her next mate into an adventure. She chronicled her lessons, inside stories, and advice in her popular blog, Adventures in Delicious Dating After 40. Oh, I love that name. Which can be found at www.datinggoddess.com. She recently released a series of 13 books based on her hands-on dating research after dating 91 men in 3.5 years. These books cover topics every dating woman over the age of 40 needs to know, from getting started, qualifying a man before agreeing to meet, breaking up with grace, ironing out dating wrinkles, all the way up to sex. So, without further ado, dating goddess, are you there on the line?
I am, Dr. Karen. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so excited you're here today. I'm very excited to hear about your new books.
Well, thank you. We could talk for an hour on them, so we will.
Oh, I'm sure. That's what we're going to do. So how did you come up with writing so many books on dating after 40?
Well, very good question. When, about 6 months into my dating adventure, my other author friends said, you know, you really need to write about this because you're having such a different experience than most of their midlife friends who just complained about all the losers and jerks and players and stuff. And I had been meeting these really sweet and wonderful and accomplished and successful men and, you know, just enjoying getting to know them and getting to know myself through the process of dating and further defining what I wanted as a result of going out with a lot of men at first. So I started writing the blog with the intention of writing a book, and then after 2.5 years of writing the blog, and then I had so much content that I decided writing one book would really be kind of stingy. So I divided it into the 13 topics that I thought most midlife women reentering the dating pool didn't know, or at least I didn't know, going into this. And that's how the 13 books were born.
Oh, great, great. So tell me a little bit more about your personal experience.
Well, again, the men I met, even though very few of them looked like George Clooney or Brad Pitt, which is our image of, you know, men over 40, or Sean Connery, or, you know, who we can name these hunks, even though they didn't look like that, if I spent some time, even coffee with them, and tried to learn who they were, many of them I discovered were treasures. They had some part, some element in them that was really touching or sweet or interesting, so much so that several dozen of the 91 have remained friends, have remained connected. Even some that I only had a coffee date or two with have become treasured friends in my life. So that was just very different than people had experienced. And it boiled down to my willingness to look beyond a receding headline or hairline or a little paunch, because, hey, I don't look like I did when I was in my 20s, and they looked beyond my wrinkles and extra curves here and there. And I just found some delightful men that I think a lot of people overlooked because of their fantasy that they were going to find a George Clooney.
Right, right. Oh, I totally agree. So what else do you think makes midlife dating different?
Well, we obviously come to the table with a lot more life experience than when we were in our 20s and 30s, some of which is good and some of which is considered baggage. And I always love that old adage that I'm looking for somebody with a carry-on size baggage, not a steamer trunk. and we have either time challenges if we're still working, and we have some people have kids at home, and Some people are in that sandwich generation where they're also caring for their parents. And then if people are retired or they don't have those situations, they have lots of time on their hands. And most people by midlife, by, you know, 40 and above, are not looking to have biological children anymore. And so that makes life different than when we were in our 20s. We were looking for, you know, a father of our children or someone to raise children with. Now we're looking for a companion and somebody to build a life with, perhaps, someone to go travel with and do activities with. We're looking for different things than we did when we were in our 20s.
Right, right. And say someone wanted to attract that special man in her life, what are some of the things that she needs to know?
Well, the first thing I think she needs to do is examine her own expectations, like beyond the physical. So get beyond tall, dark, and handsome, because there are lots of, one of my friends said, short, balding, and skinny, or something. I don't know. He was cute. That's how he would phrase his profile. And he's fascinating, humorous, and all this. But we have this expectation from the media that we should have someone who may look great. But you know what? Once that you get beyond their looks, sometimes there's not a person there who is a good match in terms of values or personality or activity choices. So being clear on what do you really want, and I know that sounds kind of trite because everybody says that, but the more I've dated, the more I've become clear on what I want. And it's different than when I was first starting out, because when I was first starting out, I was dating to practice being with a stranger and a strange man and being comfortable with that. And now I'm very comfortable with that, so I have different criteria by which I will even accept a coffee date.
Yeah,
I used to accept pretty much any coffee dates with any gentleman who met my basic criteria, and now I vet them a bit, and we can talk more about that later. But I do a few emails and a few phone calls, because a lot can be disclosed in a short amount of time. And before I go meet somebody and spend an hour getting to know them on coffee, they have to show me that we have some things in common. And also it takes the physical piece out of it, which has a pro and a con. Sometimes you can fall for somebody on the phone or on email, and then you meet them, and there's just no way that they would fit into your world, that they match anything close to what you consider physically attractive. And I've gone with men that I didn't think at first were physically attractive to me, but they became yummier as I got to know them. And so I have this phrase that yummy is as yummy does. So, you know, the sweeter and the more considerate and the more interesting the man is, the more attractive he gets.
Right, right.
So we can't always let the package determine what we're going, you know, whether we're going to be attracted to somebody or not. And I also talk about how beautiful things can come in dented packages. If I were to give you a Tiffany box that had gotten, the corner had gotten a little mushed in the transportation, would you say, oh, forget it, I don't want to even open this Tiffany box because, look, corner is dented? You would squeal, I would squeal with delight and go, oh, my heavens, a Tiffany box, what's inside? And that's how I think we need to look at people, we, you know, all of us, if we get to middle age, we have a few dents. I don't know, I do, you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the imperfections are really beautiful.
Exactly. They can be.
Right, and I do love what you said about your expectations as well, because that's at least the parts that I teach about manifesting your dream partner. I mean, that's number one, is really being clear on what you're looking for and why you're looking for it. And so it certainly is far from being trite. It's actually a very, you know, pivotal part in attracting what you really want.
But my concern is that people say, I'm clear on what I want. I want George Clooney. Well,
right. And then there's the why, like, okay, so prove it to the universe that that's really what you want. I mean, most people, when it boils down to, they want a loving, deep connection and attractiveness. But, you know, you're right. Like, sometimes their rules get way too limiting.
Frankly, kind of superficial. I mean, you want to be drawn and you want to be excited about your sweetie. But, again, I've been kind of surprised, I guess, at what I have found to be attractive that I wouldn't have guessed, but they have been so interesting or interested in me and treat me kindly and are very attentive, and that they just get more attractive as they give you what you need,
mm-hmm.
or what you want.
Right.
And I think a lot of, especially, well, I think both genders, but come 40 or 50, a lot of people have been hurt,
yeah.
which is probably why they're back in the dating pool, although they've been disappointed at some level, and so they've kind of closed down their heart. And I've had people say to me, I don't want to date again because I don't want to be hurt again. And
yep.
to me, that's part of living, is if you go around protecting your heart and not letting anyone in, you live not as full a life as I think you could,
mm-hmm.
and that's your choice. And if you choose to do that, that's your prerogative. But if you have to open your heart and know that the vulnerability of that means you may be hurt, and certainly in my 91 men, I have been hurt. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to love again.
Wow.
See,
yeah, it really does take courage.
It does. It does. And rejection stings. Even I remember coming back from a dinner date with a guy that I wasn't really interested in. He is a sweet guy, nice guy, good conversation, but just that there wasn't that extra something that I needed to be interested in him. And when I arrived home, I had an email from him that was essentially saying the same thing back to me, that you're a lovely woman and I just didn't feel the spark and, enjoy your search. And even though I wasn't interested in him, that still stung a little bit. I know. So yeah, it does take courage to put yourself out there and be vulnerable and know that the majority of people that you will meet up with are not going to be good matches. And that's just part of the process, that if you're meeting too many people that are one-time only dates, then maybe you need to go back to what are your criteria and how do you vet them. And I've also found a lot of people come to this with a sense of scarcity, that maybe they haven't had a date in a long time, and so they're thinking, oh, gosh, I have a date, and so I'm going to be as witty and charming and amenable and everything that I possibly can during this date so he'll like me and I'll have a second date. And then nothing happens, and then they get bummed because
right.
they don't have another date coming up. So you need to look at it as abundance, and that there are plenty of interesting men out there, whether they're a match for you or not, you have to determine. But by saying, oh, I need to stick with this guy because I don't have many opportunities, is really limiting your possibilities.
Oh, absolutely. And I certainly resonate with what you're saying, because in my 20s, I basically married my first boyfriend, and in my family, the message I got was that, once you pick up somebody, you better stick to that person no matter what. You cannot fail.
Dear.
You can't really date and try things out either. It was one of those sort of like, I was very Catholic, and so I stayed in a marriage for 16 years that probably wasn't serving either of us to the full extent. And certainly after we split up, we can see that each of us has blossomed in a wonderful way. But it's just really interesting hearing you say that, because, in my 20s, I mean, it's just very much into, wow, if I don't get this right away, then forget it. There isn't enough, there isn't enough to go around, kind of thing.
What pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
So I think my parents took a long time to forgive me for making a mistake.
Oh, dear. Well, that's also why I encourage people to date a bunch of different people, at least at first, because you get to see how you are around people. You get to experience different people of the same of the opposite gender, if you're, you know, dating women, dating men dating women, and I coming to this experience, this adventure, I had only had a handful of long-term boyfriends and then my marriage, and so I had very few data points. And I thought, for example, pardon?
More than me.
Yeah, right, that's true. But so my husband of 20 years, he was my main data point of how men are, quote unquote, or how men should be in a romantic relationship. And this allowed me to see, oh man, there's a full spectrum of how men are and how men can be. And so that, again, allowed me to choose better, I think, as I've gone on. And I still haven't found my one. I'm still in my search, but I think I'm much smarter and I've grown significantly in the time I've been dating.
Great. And what would you say are some of the hardest things for women reentering the dating pool after a long absence?
Well, I think based on the readers to my Adventures in Delicious Dating After 40 blog, they write in to me and tell me their issues. And then, again, interviewing midlife daters as much as I can, it seems that people come to this point of life and now are deciding to get back into dating again, and they think they're like damaged goods. They think, oh, well, I need to lose 30 pounds first, or I need to have a facelift, or I need to go to the gym more, or I need to get my financial house in order, whatever it is. They think that there's something wrong with them.
Okay.
And what I've learned is whatever you think is wrong with you could possibly be an asset. So if you're carrying a few extra pounds, then that's just more of you to love. Or it helps a man who would like a woman like you say, well, she's enjoyed life. You know, she hasn't been so rigid that she's enjoyed life. Whatever it is that's that you think of as a liability could actually be an asset. Now, having said that, I do think that both genders should go and have a makeover before they start this, because maybe they haven't had a haircut change in decades. Maybe they're wearing the type of clothes that they used to wear, you know, 10, 20 years ago. It just really, that isn't appealing now when they're putting themselves out into the dating marketplace, if you will. I've been stunned when I've looked at pictures of people online that they are wearing glasses that were popular in the 1970s. And with really just a few updates, they could be so much more appealing.
Mm.
So I do
there's obviously nothing wrong with you know, sort of updating your package.
Yeah. And then some people are set in their ways. They say, no, I can't go out on Mondays because I'm watching Dancing with the Stars, or I can't, you know, they're just set in their ways. And like I had one guy I dated for about 6 weeks, and he said, okay, here's my life. And he went through every night of the week, and the only night of the week that was available for me was Saturday night. And I thought, how are you supposed to get to know somebody if you're only seeing them or having much time with them once a week? So he would call me on his way to work, which is about 10 minutes. And I thought, man, he was really, you know, he had his night out with his boys. He had his night with his daughter. He had this, and this during the week. And I thought, you know, you got to not be so stuck in your ways. You got to have some space to allow somebody in.
Right. Yeah, and I often talk about that as well. People get so set on, they just want this partner to just fall out of the sky right into their schedule and don't understand why things aren't very successful in their day.
Well, and not only into their schedule, but into their life. So I always tease that unless it's the mail carrier, the UPS delivery, the pizza delivery person, how are they? Because they don't want to leave their house even. They don't want to do anything different than their normal routine. So they won't go to a singles dance. They won't go on a singles hike. They won't take a class where the other gender is. They want to just do what they like to do, often in their house. Which, by the way, is why internet dating has become so popular. So the first thing I think people need to do is really look at if they are ready to date. And that's why the first book of this series is called Date or Wait, Are You Ready for Mr. Great? So the second piece then is assessing their assets, and that's the second book, assessing your assets, adding up your attributes. So looking at what do you bring to the party, because you have made it to midlife and you have had some success, and what do you bring? What do you offer? And again, we typically poo-poo what we have to offer, but
you know,
ask your friends to help you come up with some things that they admire about you. It sounds sort of stilted or a little awkward at first, but really get them to share with you why you are a great catch.
Great. And then what's the next step after that?
The next step then is really determining what is your perfect mate, if you will. And I use the perfect word kind of tongue-in-cheek because there is no one that's perfect. There are just good matches or great matches. And so that's in the book In Search of King Charming, Who Do I Want to Share My Throne? And I see King Charming because Prince Charming was when we were in our 20s or maybe 30s, and I don't know about you, but boy toys are kind of fun once in a while, but no, I don't want to be sharing my throne with some boy toys. So that's why I say King Charming.
I love that.
At, you know, 40s, 50s, we're queens. Come on. We don't have much use for a prince, so In Search of King Charming. And so that goes back to really, like you said, making your list of what do you want, and then picking like five. What are the things that are really non-negotiable, that if he's mean to you, if he's, you know, what are the things that you say, these are deal breakers, and you can't have 20 deal breakers. So, and then looking also, as you are dating people, what are the warning signs that this person isn't for you? So if they are disrespectful or if they're not considerate, like I had a guy the other day email me the warning of a date we were supposed to have, telling me he got called out of town. Well, can't you pick up the phone and tell me?
Right,
I mean, on the day of telling me you need to reschedule and then emailing it, that it just didn't seem as considerate as I would have hoped.
Right, absolutely.
And then looking for his communication compatibility. The last boyfriend I had, who was 56, and I'm 53 right now, he would text me and text me problems in the relationship. You know, text me problems that he was having about things with us. And I thought, this is so, it felt disrespectful rather than picking up the phone or actually working it out in person. It was such a kind of coward's way out to be texting. And interestingly, that's how he broke up with me. He broke up with me by text at 56 years old.
What has the world come to, they say.
I know. It's almost like the burger post-it breakup in Sex and the City. But, yeah, you'd think that at 56 they'd know better, but some of them don't. So which brings us to the next book, which is called Embracing Midlife Men, Insights into Curious Behaviors.
Okay.
Because I do love men, and once you understand better what motivates them and what makes them tick a little bit, then you get to appreciate them even more. Rather than, I commonly would scratch my head and say, so what was he thinking when he texted me, whatever? I mean, how could he possibly think that that was an appropriate thing to do? And so I had too many of those head scratches, and I interviewed my male friends and some of these men that I had dated, but we decided to be friends, and really got underneath some of the behaviors and trying to understand them a little bit more.
Oh, okay. Okay. Can you give me some other examples?
Let's see, what else? It's like people, men generally on the first and second and sometimes subsequent dates try to impress you. I mean, that's just part of the deal. They want to make a good impression, like I want to make a good impression on them. And so I've been amazed at the men who will, like, not even do what I consider kind of basic niceties, which is things like opening the door or, you know, having you order first or, you know, just really pretty basic things. And I think, does he not know to do these things, or does he not think that they're valuable, or is he just not that into me that he wants to impress me? I don't know.
I see. Okay. And so you don't think it's this whole feminist kind of thing that they get confused around and don't know how to act?
Well, they do get confused around it. That's true. But I guess my sense is that on a date, usually you would do the chivalrous things if that's how you were brought up and see how she reacts.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a test from the guy's point of view to see, is the woman going to, you know, bark at them, which I've been told some do, and then that lets him know if she's a match for him or not.
Right.
Or last weekend I had a date with a new guy, and I usually insist on just a coffee date for the first date. And this guy, we were both driving about an hour, and I thought, that's a little cold to insist on just coffee. So he had been wanting to take me to dinner, so I accepted that. And we had a nice dinner, but it was clear to me that he was a sweet guy, but it was not a good match for us. Well, on the way out of the restaurant, he said, well, why don't we stroll the neighborhood a little bit? And I said, sure, fine. And he grabs my hand. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm holding hands here with this guy that I'm really not interested in seeing again. And so I dropped hands to button my coat with that hand. Okay, fine. And then I put my purse in that hand. And so then he puts his arm around me. Oh, man. So this is one of those curious behaviors. Like, what clues did I give him that I was interested? I don't know.
You're a woman.
Well,
you agree to a date.
and I tend to be, I like to be nice. I don't want to be disrespectful. He treated me to a lovely dinner. And so I was, you know, trying to be pleasant. And so I wrote a blog posting called Mistaking Nice for Interest. And I've been on both sides. I've mistaken a man's niceness for interest. But, how to deal with that, and I had to make it up in the moment, because usually if there is a PDA, there's very clear interest on both sides. Like, I've even had men say to me, may I hold your hand, or, you know, they've been overt about it, or, and so he mistook it, and so he kept asking as we're strolling around, I'd love to see you again, and I was trying not to be mean, so I would be nebulous, and then when I got home, I called him and told him that I didn't think we were a match, and he was disappointed. But I just didn't want to leave him thinking that we were going to see each other again, and I also didn't want to just disappear, because that's what happens with most people, is they just go poof.
They don't
return
even
phone calls.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't complete it. They don't, because it's too scary.
Well, they think it's hurtful to tell other people that they're not a match, and I think it's hurtful to not tell them.
Right. I agree with you.
And so I'd rather do it as gently and lovingly as I possibly can, and based on these few dozen people who have remained in my life, I guess I'm doing it okay, because they haven't been so affronted that they said, I don't want to ever talk to you again. So we've defined what we want. We've decided if we're ready. We've looked at who we want in our life. We've looked at understanding men a little bit more. Now it's time to get our toe in the dating pool, right? And that's the next book, is Dipping Your Toe in the Dating Pool, Dive In Without Belly Flopping.
My favorite name. I love the name of that book.
You like that one?
I love it.
I can't tell you how many names we went through for 13 books. So really, like, dating strategically, if you will. So part of it is getting to know you. Part of it is getting to know men in general, and then the man specifically you're dating. But being clear on, like, what is going to give you the best impression, which I wouldn't think midlife people would really need to be reminded of, but based upon how people have appeared for a date with me, I think they do, and based on the stories that I'm told. So,
right.
Like, you know what, how do you want to put your best foot forward? Don't show up. Like people say, well, I'm told to just be myself. Well, you know what, being yourself does not mean you can show up in sweats and without having brushed your hair that day. And, yeah, that's being yourself, but that's not being your best self. So how do you be your best self? And part of that's your attire and your presentation. And part of that is the questions you want to know from this person, the answers. So you don't come with an interrogation list, but you come with three or four questions that help you uncover this person's values, or at least at this point what they're willing to disclose, and some about their history. Like, it tells you a lot if you ask them what happened with their last relationship and they're so nebulous. Like, I had one man say, well, I don't share my dirty laundry, or I don't, the past is past and it really doesn't matter. You know what? It does matter. That if, you know, the last five women left you because you were messing around on them, then yeah, that matters.
Right.
And actually I did ask a guy once because he told me how angry his ex-wife was and how it had cost him $100,000 in legal bills, when initially he had said, well, the marriage was over and we just hung together because the kids were still home. Well, if that were true, she would not be making your life miserable by making you run up $100,000 legal bills.
Right.
So I said, why was she so angry? And he goes, well, I think it was when she found out about the extramarital affairs, plural. So, thinking, yeah, that's probably why she was mad. So that told me all I needed to know about this guy.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I give him credit for actually admitting it. I mean, on a date.
Well, he seemed surprised that I even asked, because I think most people just, oh, you poor thing, $100,000. That, you know, that woman must really be a witch. And I think nobody really kind of logically put together, well, if the marriage is really over, why would she be contesting this so adamantly? And part of being in the dating pool is being in wonder about your date's behavior. So rather than being judgmental, although there's a fine line, like the example I just gave you, I made an assessment about him, and I made an assessment that his values were different than my values. So is that being judgmental, or is that just making an assessment? I don't know. But part of it is just going, why would somebody say or do that? What would cause that? And just being in wonder rather than making them bad and wrong.
Right, right. And that's the judgment piece. Bad or wrong, yeah.
And bad or wrong, usually it means different than how you would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And people are different. So we have to be in wonder during the whole dating process. And looking at some of our decisions about who we're willing to go out with, and I hate to admit this, but I have gone out with men for more than one time who I knew were not good matches for me, but out of loneliness.
Oh.
That it was better to have somebody than to have nobody. And that doesn't serve anybody either, because that's really taking advantage of someone. And it's hard for you in the moment to realize that that's what you're doing.
Right, right.
Because you think, well, I enjoy his company, and I enjoy going to the movies with him, or I enjoy his attention. You know, there are things you enjoy about him, but then when you step back and you think, do I really see that he has the values and goals that I need or I desire, and you have to say, no, he doesn't, then you have to cut it loose, because those aren't going to change. The values are less likely to change.
Right, right. And are you saying in terms of, you know, when you begin dating that there's a balance between, you know, an interrogation, you know, versus, you know, being really forthright about asking honest questions so that you can really see whether there's a connection. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, more the latter. And part of it is just hanging out and just seeing how you feel with him and seeing
how
seeing how you, like, do you feel respected? Do you feel desired? Do you feel that he's interested in you? And are you interested in him? Are you interested mm-hmm. in knowing more about him, what makes him tick, and his life experiences? Or is one date pretty much the extent of, okay, I found out about this guy. I'm really not interested enough to find out any more about him. And that makes a very, very shallow dating experience if you're not interested in the person, if you're only looking, I mean, and some people, frankly, are just looking for activity partners. And if that's both of you are just want somebody to go to the movies with or play bridge with or go skiing with, then that's fine. But if one of you is looking for more than just an activity partner, then it really sets up an imbalance.
Right. No, totally understand that. That makes a lot of sense. Again, it's not a right and wrong. It's just like, you know, what do each of you want and whether you resonate with that.
Right. Right.
And so what's next?
Well, the next book in the series, and people don't have to read these in series. I just tried to present them in a sequence that made sense to me. So the next one is called Winning the Online Dating Game, Stack the Deck in Your Favor, because mm-hmm. so many people are going online, and that's how I've met the majority of people that I've gone out with is online. And it can be either fantastic or it can be frustrating. And at the beginning, I think I was frustrated a bit, and that's the lessons from online dating are in this particular book, like the thing about, only meeting for a coffee date and, really reading their profiles to uncover what is not being said. And some people embed things in their profile that they think everyone will understand that really they don't. And so I've included a list in there on euphemisms and what is really meant behind them. Like one of my friends is into, let's see, how should we say, out of the norm experiences, and he called himself adventurous.
Okay.
And I said, by adventurous, I would think you meant you like to rock climb or parachute.
Right, right.
And his adventures are more on the horizontal realm. So, and he said, well, I say that I'm adventurous. I'm looking for an adventurous partner. And I said, most women wouldn't interpret that the way you are meaning. And most people's profiles do not say anything about them that's compelling. It's pretty much like a laundry list of either who they are or what they're looking for. They don't write it in a way that is engaging. And they also, their pictures are pretty bad. I understand that women, you do the glamour shot thing, and then they show up and they look their normal middle-aged self. And the guys are going, where's your daughter that was in the picture? You know, where is it? The mom must have come to check me out first. And men are just as bad. Men wear their baseball caps and their sunglasses, and they post pictures of them from 50 feet away, and it's really sad. So I think one of the reasons my online profile has been successful is the pictures that I post are well done, and they're snapshots, so they're not done with all this lighting and special makeup and airbrushed and all that. And then even though I'm told that very few men actually read a profile, they usually go by the
true?
Pictures. Yeah. Or at least the pictures are what compel them. And then if they are interested, they will read the profile. But most men, a lot of men don't read the profiles. And so then in your profile, you need to describe yourself in a way that's compelling and not in a way that's repelling. So what that goes back to the Assessing Your Assets book.
Okay.
You pull some of those things in that here's why you are a great catch and here's why men should be interested in you. And I think that's one of the reasons why I have this steady stream of emails and contacts is because the pictures and the profile all address who I am. Now, I will have a caveat that says, based on some of the men who contact me, it appears that the only criteria was breathing. Because I think, what do they possibly think we had in common?
Right.
But, you know, I showed up on their matches for the day because I was in the same universe and I was breathing. So do know that there are men. And I read a stat recently that said that of the online daters, over half of the men never get one date.
Really?
Yeah, and I heard 25% of the women. But unfortunately, the article did not say in what age group or how long they had been online. But
I wonder how active they were.
Yeah, all of that. You know, it didn't go into these things that we're wondering about. But I don't know if, I mean, even if that was overstated by, you know, half, it means that people just don't know how to do the online dating thing. So that's why I wrote that book on that topic, because it is, the over 40 crowd is the fastest growing demographic. I do know that. And so why not make it work for you instead of just being frustrated by it?
Well, I'm sure that the way you, like you were saying, the way that you write your profile, I mean, it's amazing. People can have all sorts of spelling mistakes and, you know, just things that don't make sense and things that you're like, why did you put that in there?
Exactly.
And so this book is going to be, you know, really, really valuable because, you know, not everybody has that particular street smart when it comes to online dating. So,
well, and I have a marketing background, marketing and sales, and so
it's
really just marketing 101, but for you. And again, if you have trouble, get your friends or get somebody who can write persuasively or compellingly to help you with it. Don't feel you have to go it alone. And then what I did was I asked some of my male friends who may be married but I adore, I asked them to read it and give me feedback because I said, I want to attract a man like you. And so what would be compelling to you if you were single?
Okay. Okay.
So you
kind of do a test
with your target market.
That's great.
Men that you adore.
great advice. So the next step is checking him out?
Yeah, and it's not even a date yet because, like I said, it depends on what stage you're in. Like I said, in the beginning, I would go out with pretty much anybody who met some basic criteria, and then as time became more critical, I really needed to do some qualifying or vetting of them before I went out, even just for coffee. So that book is called Check Him Out Before Going Out, Head Off Dud Dates.
Mm-hmm.
And because unfortunately I've been on those dates, and this is one of the reasons why I keep insisting on coffee only, because I had a date a while ago where a guy sounded really fun on the phone, and so I agreed to meet him for lunch. Well, he decided after we ordered to tell me not only his life history, he was 61 years old, but his father's life history. So he started when his father was a child and it took him up to when he was born, and I was done with my lunch by the time the guy got up to his own age 11. And he's 61 years old, and I'm thinking, I have 50 more years to listen to. And I'm done with my lunch, and he hasn't even started because he's been talking all the time. So finally I said I need to excuse myself to go to the restroom, and I did. And when I came back and I said, well, you know, I'll be ready to go as soon as you're done with your lunch, I thought it'd just be rude to leave while he's not even hasn't even started, although some of my friends said they would have. So anyway, I should have vetted him a bit more over the phone, or I should have met him for coffee. Because coffee, you can extricate yourself after even a half an hour without being rude. But lunch, I had to wait till he was done with his lunch.
Right.
So check him out, vet him, find out, ask questions that are critical to you. And the guys complain that women ask a little too heady questions on the phone before they've even met, and they complain about that. So
Really?
So you know, you don't have to talk about what do they plan to do 10 years from now, or but just some basic things. And there's a wonderful book called Intellectual Foreplay, which I did not write, and in it she has just 1,000 different questions on different categories that you can ask someone that will help you understand them a little bit more. Things as simple as favorite books or favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Just all of these things are windows into the person. What do they love to do? What have they done lately they haven't done in a while? I mean, just some very good questions that help you understand if this person is likely to be somebody that you want to meet. And then the balance is you don't want to have too much phone time before you meet, because I have had where I met one guy who was out of my area, and we talked every day for an hour over the phone.
Wow.
And finally, after a month, he was going to be in my area. So we met, and there was just nothing when we met.
Mm.
And I was so disappointed, because on the phone it seemed like we really got along, but how he treated me in person was so different than how he talked on the phone.
Interesting. So that distance made it very different.
Exactly. So, and I've heard these stories of people communicating with people for months or even a year before they meet, and then they meet, and the picture that they'd shown them is 20 years old, and, you know, just nothing when they've met. Or, again, how someone acts in public, or how someone treats a waiter, or how somebody treats you. You can't get that over the phone. So don't spend too much time on the phone before you meet, but do spend enough time to know. And there have been plenty of guys who I've had phone conversations with, sometimes multiple phone conversations with, that I've decided, you know, we're just really at different places, or we have really different goals or values, and we've not met. And then, of course, Google him if you have his last name, and even though know that there are many instances of people having the same last name,
right,
you know, having the same name and being different people, so have that. You could sometimes find interesting things. I found my last boyfriend, I found these postings he'd made to some online groups that gave me some different perspective on him than the man that I knew. So now we're ready to go on the date, and so we want to make sure we're going to have the best experience possible, and this is outlined in First Rate First Dates, increase the chance of a second date. And so how, you know, what are some of the first date blunders that women make? What are some of the signs that he won't be asking you for a second date? Actually, I wrote that one in my head during a first date when this guy was, it was clear we were not going to be having a second date. So so in my head, I'm just making notes of things like the waiter comes over and you agreed to meet for a drink. And so the waiter comes over and asks if we want some appetizers. And the guy says quickly, no, we're just having a drink. And then when the waiter comes over to ask if we want a refill, no, we're just having one drink.
Right.
Okay, it's clear to me he doesn't want to spend any more time. He's just allowing me to finish my drink. And so some things that will help you from being embarrassed if those things happen, and things you can do to better ensure that if you want a second date, that there will be one.
And are there any red flags?
Sure. There are lots of red flags.
I'll hear this.
Common ones are he's really rude to the waiters. I've seen that.
Okay.
That he just disses, you know, women or his ex, and just is full of anger. He hasn't healed yet. That you really don't want to be around that. You know, he lumps all women into one category. That he shows up without having put any thought to his own personal appearance or presentation. I've had people show up just looking like they've slept in their clothes.
Okay.
You know, and again, I tend to date you know, accomplished, successful men, and so I have a different expectation than somebody showing up looking like they slept in their clothes.
Right, right.
So let's say the first date went well, and now you decide to see him again, and maybe several times, and so how do you know if this is somebody you should keep seeing or not? And I have what's called the delight disappointment scale.
Okay.
So how to track whether you're mostly in delight, which is what we want to be in the dating world. We're supposed to be trying to impress or at least please the other person, make a positive impression. And so I actually created this scale where you can track what your feeling is. Are you delighted at what he does, or are you disappointed at what he does? And then it'll help you visually look at, I think I should cut this guy loose. And then in multi-dating responsibly, we talk about dating several people at once. So how to do that responsibly and with integrity and playing the field without being a player.
Right.
So I once had 7 dates with 6 guys in 5 days.
Okay.
And how do you not be a player? What do you need to do to be able to play the field, but to not lead somebody on or make them think you're exclusive when you're not? And the values of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was going to say that's the mature, you know, honesty piece that some people just have difficulty being honest about that's what they're doing because they think,
well,
you know,
I think they're
just drop them.
Exactly. They're afraid somebody's going to drop them. But my assumption is if I've met somebody online, generally there are other women. That's just the assumption to start with. Don't assume that they're being exclusive. Unless I tell you that. And frankly, sometimes I'm not ready to be exclusive, and they say they are. So how do you deal with that? And then we have moving on gracefully, break up without heartache.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how to tell someone that you're not a fit in a way that leaves them with their dignity and their self-respect intact and not just go poof or not be blaming about it. And then we have from fear to frolic, getting naked without getting embarrassed. So your relationship has progressed to the point where it's time to get naked, and a lot of women in the midlife range, this is a big issue for them because, again, our bodies do not usually look like they did when they were in their 20s. And even though there are many really fit women in midlife, there are also many who have a few sags and bags and lumps and bumps and stretch marks, and people can be embarrassed about that and how to deal with that and, you know, how to know you're ready and dealing with the whole sexual part. And the last book, Ironing Out Dating Wrinkles, Work Through Challenges Without Getting Steamed, is all about the inevitable relationship ups and downs and how it's different in a dating relationship, even if it's just a week-long relationship or a month-long or 6-month-long, because you don't have the commitment that you had in marriage to work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody can go poof, game over, at any time. And so how do you work out these kinks that are inevitable in any relationship? So that's what the 13th book of this series is about.
Oh, you know, that's gravy. I think, you know, people just, a lot of times they don't want to admit that they're going to make mistakes or that things aren't going to turn out the way they envision, and then they can get really down about themselves. So this
exactly.
is a really important, you know, resource for them to feel supported and that it's okay. It's okay to, you know, try things out, make mistakes, try again, see what works, see what doesn't work. I mean, you're, you know, a gleaming example of, you know, that. And I think that one really needs to have a great sense of self-esteem to understand that that's just part of the way it works.
Ah. Well, I equate it to that movie Groundhog Day.
Okay.
so every date is a chance to try the lessons you learned from the last dates you've gone on with this new person, because you're wiser now and
right, you're
you've
wiser,
learned some things. And so you get a new opportunity, just like Bill Murray got a new opportunity every day in that movie to try something new based on what he'd learned in the past.
Absolutely. Well, we only have a couple minutes left, so I want to make sure that people can connect to you through your blog or otherwise. If you want to just tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
Sure, datinggoddess.com. And I want to mention that we have a special bonus book for the order of any of these books. And that's actually, Dr. Karen is one of the contributors to that book called Attracting Your Next Great Mate. And there are 12 dating and relationship experts in that book who have a variety of opinions on how to do that. And that's the free gift with purchase of any of these books. And then also on the site is a free book for anyone who joins our free VIP mailing list. And that is called You've Got to Kiss a Lot of Princes. And it's a sampling of all 13 books. So they get to see what's in that. But, you know, my philosophy is that there aren't frogs and there aren't losers and jerks. They're just men who aren't for you. And
right.
They may be a prince for somebody else, but they're just not your king, right?
Exactly. Oh, my gosh, it's been just so delightful to have you on the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being on our show today.
It's been fun, Dr. Karen.
All right, and for everybody, if you there is also, for my readers of the Law of Attraction, love.com, there is a link on the sidebar straight to the Dating Goddesses page.
Great, thank
All
you.
All right, so take care. Happy dating.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We'll see you next time on the Law of Attraction Love Radio Show. If you enjoyed this show, you can mark it as one of your favorites. I'd highly appreciate it. Bye for now.